Good morning, everyone. We're going to hear six cases today. All of them will be taken under advisement, and a written opinion or order will follow in due course. Our first case is 02-2867 Evanston Community Consolidated School District versus John M. Mr. Abram.
Good morning. Thomas Abram for School District 65. This case is on cross appeal from the district court's review of an administrative hearing under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. It concerns the school district's provision of services to John in third grade and its evaluation of John at the end of third grade in its proposed IEP and services for fourth grade. The district appeals three decisions, rulings of the district court. First, the court awarded reimbursement to the parents for an independent occupational and physical therapy evaluation, which they sought after they disagreed with the district's own evaluation performed at the end of the third grade. The applicable IDEA regulations, as well as the Seventh Circuit's precedent cited in our briefs, makes clear that reimbursement to the parents is proper only upon a finding that the district's own evaluations was inappropriate. Here, the hearing officer found that the occupational and physical therapy evaluations in the district was appropriate, and that clearly is supported by a preponderance of the administrative record, which was not supplemented at the district court level.
And to speak on that point, since there was no new evidence presented at the administrative level, then don't we have to review the district court judge's findings and conclusions de novo?
Certainly you review the district court's rulings with regard to questions of law de novo. That is absolutely correct. With regard to his findings, he was obligated to not substitute his own judgment for that of the district court, and that your ruling with regard to his factual findings, therefore, would be correct.
De novo.
Yes.
Right.
Now, with regard to the decision of the district court, as I just alluded to, what we have here is a decision that the district court overturned the hearing officer without any specific findings identifying any deficiencies with the district's evaluations.
Should there be any sort of presumption in cases like this that the hearing examiner, who has, I would think, a little more expertise than a district judge in a specialized area,
absolutely
be entitled to some even greater deference?
Your Honor, in your cases, Dale M., for instance, so hold that the hearing officer, both by experience as well as firsthand observation, there were four private consultants and two district therapists who testified. She was in the best position both to synthesize that testimony, and she ruled that indeed the evaluations were appropriate, and credited the district's evaluators in part because they based their evaluations on firsthand observation in the school setting, which is the appropriate and, I must say, professionally preferred manner in which that is done. So Your Honor is quite correct that in this type of situation where there's no new evidence brought before the district court, he should give a great deal of deference, and as I say, your precedent so holds.
Well, if additional evidence is taken in the district court, then your position is what?
Well, the position
that...
Should
deference be afforded?
Well, certainly not to the supplemental evidence, because the hearing officer would not have had the opportunity to hear that, but that is not the case in this instance. The second, well,
the only case where the district court did nothing more than review the record that was compiled in the administrative hearing and come to some different conclusions on it.
That's correct. The only thing that the district court said was that the evaluations ignored the parents' concerns, and that, as outlined in our briefs, is clearly at odds and clearly erroneous based on the administrative record. Indeed, the plaintiff, the parent's own brief at page 3, cites the parent's concern that the evaluations focus on John's function in the classroom. That's exactly what was done in this instance.
The occupational therapist was not formally qualified, is that right?
Your Honor, we are not bringing to you on appeal whether or not the occupational therapist was qualified in the sense that she was working under provisional authorization, clearly legal under the applicable Illinois regulations. She did not have on-site supervision by a licensed therapist up until May when she did her evaluation. So that issue really doesn't affect the evaluation at all in any event because she was licensed. But skipping to that particular point, we would submit that the failure to have on-site supervision, which arguably, and there is no case law interpreting the Illinois regulation on this point, but even assuming that for these purposes meant that she did not meet the Illinois requirements, the hearing officer again found that the occupational therapy services actually provided John in third grade were entirely appropriate. And she held specifically that the occupational therapist, her qualification and her skill was not an issue. That's directly from her conclusions. So I would submit that under...
Are these matters primarily a matter of process or a matter of outcome?
Well,
process in the sense that you're absolutely...
fundamental to this case.
You're absolutely right, Your Honor. Under Seventh Circuit President Heather S. In particular, this court has distinguished between technical violations which do not deprive a student of a free and appropriate education or services, which could be grounds for compensatory occupational therapy services, and those technical violations which do not result in the deprivation of educational opportunities and which cannot be grounds for the award of compensatory services. The hearing officer here ruled that the services were appropriate. So even if it were true that the occupational therapist for the district was not appropriately supervised on site, that does not, based upon the administrative record, have resulted in any deprivation of educational opportunities. The court, in fact, ruled that...
She was just starting out, I gather, is that right? I mean,
That's correct. It was a matter of timing of when she took her examination. She graduated in September, and the first available test was in March. And again, under Illinois law, that was entirely appropriate that she continue to work under provisional authorization.
And we would have a different case here if there had been some problems with the treatment or how she dealt with this, with the child.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. But as the hearing officer concluded, she found that the district provided an exemplary inclusive education, those are her exact words, including appropriate services. And so that there has nothing in the administrative record to establish that this child was deprived of anything. In fact, if you look at the record, the parents at the end of third grade wrote a laudatory letter saying that John had achieved more of his goals than they could have imagined. So that indeed this is, in that sense, at most a technical matter which could not support a award of compensatory occupational therapy services. And in that regard, the hearing officer ruled that there was to be awarded compensatory services, and the district court merely upheld that. But since that was a matter of applying, in our estimation, the wrong legal standard, that is, they awarded compensatory services based upon merely a technical violation, that is clearly a matter of legal interpretation. It's a question of law, and therefore the deference that is otherwise to be shown the hearing officer based upon her review of the record, the factual record, that does not apply, and you are to review her legal conclusions de novo. And since she applied the wrong legal standard in this instance in awarding compensatory occupational therapy services. We would ask you to review that and reverse on the basis of established Seventh Circuit precedent.
This involves $800, is that correct?
The reimbursement, Your Honor, originally involved with just $800, but that's correct.
That's not allocated as between physical and occupational, I gather.
No, but the third ruling that we appealed from, Your Honor, was with regard to the declaration by the district court that the parents are prevailing parties and entitled to attorney's fees. And as our brief indicates, we would ask, number one, certainly if you reverse the district court's award of reimbursement and compensatory occupational therapy
but
services.
The compensatory side, the hearing officers and it's found against you, right?
That's right, but as I indicated, Your Honor, that was on a question of law. She applied the wrong legal standard. We would argue that, therefore, the deference that would be otherwise shown to her on her factual rulings and interpretation ought not to apply there. I reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Stone.
Thank you. May it please the court and counsel and Mr. and Mrs. M. I'd like to start just by citing a couple of things from the record before I get into the response to Mr. Abrams' argument. First, the district is required, and this is one of the issues in the case, the district is required as part of the IEP process to consider whether John will be tested in standardized achievement testing district-wide and statewide. In its brief, the district has alleged that we have waived that issue by failing to provide testimony on that point. I just wanted to cite the testimony that was in the administrative hearing. Mrs. M. testified about this in transcript number 3, page 227 and 229 through 30, and Mrs. Feeney testified to this matter, transcript number 4, page 49. 70 and also 70 to 73. In addition, this was argued in our memorandum of law in support of summary judgment at the district court level, and there was no objection to it at that point, so I don't believe there's a waiver. I'll start with the school district evaluations.
Well, can you start with the standard of review, because it seems pretty clear to me at least that the district court judge drew his own conclusions about the evidence. There was no new evidence for him to review, and of course, when we're in that kind of situation and no new evidence is taken at the district court, then we can't disturb the district court shouldn't disturb the hearing officer's findings unless they're clearly erroneous. Do you agree that that's...
Yes, Your Honor, that's standard, or if the
right.
if the hearing officer did not apply the proper legal standard.
Right.
Yes.
Right, but here the district court doesn't give us any real explanation or say why he quarrels or provide a basis for his disagreement with the district court.
Well, Your Honor, actually I believe he does. There were witnesses from the parent side, very qualified witnesses, who testified that John has deficits that needed remediation from continued direct services in occupational and physical therapy. From the school district or by the school district. He also says that the school district evaluations, and this is directly from the regulations, they relied upon limited criterion. So the regulations require that there be a variety of assessment techniques used, that the parental information is used, and in this case the physical therapist provided both standardized testing showing John to be in the bottom 1% in locomotive skills, locomotion, in addition to describing a physical condition regarding his gross motor ability that was causing him knee pain and requiring shoe orthotics.
And I understand that the district court took a different view of the evidence, but what I want to know is, I mean, it seems to me that the district court has to point out why the specific findings of the hearing officer are not clearly erroneous, or are clearly erroneous, rather.
Your Honor, if I can get into the hearing officer's decision-making, she is not entitled to deference. And
before you get to that,
yes,
you would agree that the hearing officer in cases like this, hearing officer, whoever she may be, is selected based on some expertise in this area of dealing with children with special needs and that sort of thing. As opposed to the district judge, you just file your case and you get a district judge on the wheel who may have no experience at all in this area.
In a general sense, yes, sir, but certainly there's variation between hearing officers in what their expertise is.
Okay.
This case involved occupational and physical therapy, and this hearing officer had no background in occupational or physical therapy. And in fact, this hearing officer applied the wrong legal standard. And the reason I know that is on, I believe it's page 8 of her decision, she says that she applied the Rowley standard in determining that the school district evaluations were appropriate. The Rowley standard applies to the sufficiency of an IEP. It does not apply to the sufficiency of evaluations. And in fact, that's a heavily regulated area in the law. She did not cite any regulations, and I provided them to you in the brief. She didn't cite any regulations regarding the sufficiency of evaluations, and she didn't use any of the language from any of the regulations that apply. For example, that a variety of assessment tools be used, as opposed to just simply the checklist, the very subjective checklist that the school-based physical therapists use. That parental information be considered. Again, she didn't say after the parents' witnesses testified, she did not discuss why the school district evaluation or how it could be appropriate when it did not consider the important information provided by the physical therapist, the private physical therapist. That no single procedure is used as a sole criterion, and that's really what the physical therapist did. She talked to teachers, but it's basically she filled out a subjective checklist that did not in any sense look at the efficiency of this boy's gross motor movements. It's impossible to do a physical therapy evaluation without looking at efficiency of movement. I'll give you an example of that. She testified, and this was in her testimony, that John runs in a manner similar to his peers. When the independent evaluator said that he really doesn't run at all, that both feet are not in the air at the same time, that he does not have a reciprocal arm swing as he's running, and that he keeps his arms to his side for balance. The school district's evaluation was entirely subjective, solely based on the evaluator's consideration of whether John was independent or not independent. She found him to be independent in everything, even though the parents' witnesses, one of whom is a instructor at Northwestern University School of Physical Therapy and is the director of 8 pediatric outpatient physical therapy units. She testified that John has deficits, in balance, endurance, strength, and coordination. And this was corroborated by the independent
all results of Down syndrome. Everything that he has traceable to Down syndrome.
Very possibly so, but it is those are conditions that can be improved. What the school district has done instead of working on development of this boy for his postural considerations, for example, where you need a certain amount of upper body strength to maintain good posture, they put a seat cushion behind him instead of giving him services to make him independent and strong. In addition, the school-based physical therapist said that John, for example, could do 10 sit-ups. That's a totally subjective conclusion. The independent evaluator palpated John's stomach and found that there was no muscular contraction. That's an objective, observable sign that there were no stomach muscle contractions and that the only movement forward was from momentum from his throwing his shoulders and neck forward. That's in the record as well. The regulations require that the child be assessed in all areas related to his suspected disability and that it be a comprehensive, that it's sufficiently comprehensive to identify all of the child's special ed needs. The physical therapy evaluation was not comprehensive, did not take into account parental information, did not identify his needs, and was of no value whatsoever in drafting a program for John. Now, in this case, it so happens that the special ed director added physical therapy direct services, despite his own physical therapist findings. And in doing so, he noted that there was poor balance, that John had poor balance. You won't find that anywhere in the school-based physical therapy evaluation. So the evaluation, the physical therapy evaluation was not up to snuff regulation, according to regulations. The hearing officer did not look at any of this, didn't quote it, didn't use the language from it, didn't think in those directions. There's nothing in the opinion other than this misstated legal application of the Rowley standard, which does not apply. The district court, on the other hand, found and cited Seventh Circuit precedent that the hearing officer did not give due weight to the testimony of the parents' witnesses. And that is plainly true. She didn't mention any of their criticisms on the occupational therapy side. The school-based occupational therapist was this new, brand new occupational therapist.
And other than the fact that she obviously wasn't fully licensed, you know, what support in there is there in the record for the conclusion that her services were inadequate?
Well, the parents complained about her services in December, very early in the school year, and I cited a letter that they wrote in my brief that she was pulling John out of class and that she was not providing proper services to him. They did not know at the time that she was unlicensed. The school district didn't know. And this requirement of having a licensed person is a minimal threshold requirement, and it is not a technical violation to say that she practiced without a license, basically.
Just for curiosity, was she ever subsequently licensed?
Oh, yes, in May, when she finally took the exam.
But that was the earliest opportunity to take the exam.
That's what she testified to, yes.
And she did have a provisional license, so she...
Again, she testified to that, but the provisional license is not valid unless there's proper supervision. School district did not provide an on-site supervisor. And this is a requirement that I didn't write. This is a requirement by the Department of Professional Regulation.
And
this
other than the parents complaining about her performance, is there anything else in the record indicating, or what would you look at in the record to show that her performance was inadequate?
I would show, for one thing, her evaluation, which came very late in the year. She had three comments in that evaluation that just stick out. And they're indications to me that she was not really supervised, even on paper, very closely. The one comment is that John accommodated for his inability to use his fingers, to use a spork, which is a combined spoon and fork to pick up chopped pieces of fruit. He accommodated for that by using his fingers instead of using the implement. Second is that...
It's hard to use those sporks.
It's hard to use them.
I used one this morning at Corner Bakery.
All right, sir, but it is not an accommodation to use your fingers, and it is not what the idea is about. To have children using their fingers. The idea is for them to develop. Second is that, I lost my train of thought. I apologize, I completely lost my train of thought. The occupational therapist, she stated in her evaluation that John had the strength and range of motion consistent with a child with Down syndrome. And there's a range in strength and range of motion and strength within children with Down syndrome. That's like saying he has the strength and range of motion of a Hispanic child. It makes no sense. This was the evaluation. This was the time to assess his strength and range of motion. She didn't do it. And third, she mentions that he has difficulty with oculomotor skills, and that's separating eye movement from head movement. And she doesn't say another word about it. That's a very important and very debilitating deficit in a child in school. as far as doing, and this is from the testimony from Ms. Woods and the independent evaluator, Mr. Jones. It affects things like the ability to look up at the blackboard and then return your gaze to the paper and take notes on the paper. There was district court did find that there was not due weight given. There is a great disparity in the occupational therapy side in the qualifications of the witnesses. There is also the problems that the parents brought to the school's attention in December and January about her provision of services. There is her evaluation of John, which has these unusual comments in it. And to get back, I guess, in my last minute, I really haven't had a chance to get into the main appeal, the cross appeal. I guess I'll rely on my brief. For the compensatory occupational therapy that...
Well, you just have a minute. What could you lose from us and still retain prevailing party status here? What could you afford to lose? Do you lose anything? Do you no longer prevailing party status?
I believe that for reimbursement for the independent evaluation, because this was something that was contested, that the parents wanted reimbursement for and won, I believe that is by itself prevailing party status. The occupational therapy, which is, this is the abuse of discretion standard, by the way, and I believe also would entitle us a year of compensatory occupational therapy. And in addition, there are the other things that I've mentioned in my briefs, the project choices order that the school district used them. I see that my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Stone.
Thank you.
Saber? 4 minutes.
Your Honor, first, the hearing officer did not commit an error of law. Rowley is an overarching standard with regard to the sufficiency of free public education. The specific regulation, parents cite no law that says that they're at variance. The district court cites nothing that suggests that the hearing officer committed error. Secondly, the hearing officer's opinion goes through extensive review of the parents' consultant's testimony. With regard to the sufficiency of the district's evaluations, I commend you to page 2 of our reply brief that shows the PT therapist did look at efficiency. With regard to the OT therapist, the record is absolutely replete with the fact that there were 6 meetings at which the parents attended at which the occupational therapist gave reports during the year. The occupational therapist had correspondence with the private consultant in preparing her analysis. As to oculomotor functioning, for instance, specific accommodations were proposed by the occupational therapist. One of the things that she noted was he had trouble scanning on the blackboard, so the accommodation modification was that all written material was to be copied from paper at his desk. With regard to his ability to use a computer, that was identified as a relative strength, and the occupational therapist and assistive technology therapist went out and bought 3 computer programs to assist in his learning because he could keyboard, and that was a specific finding of the occupational therapist, clearly covered by her. With regard to standardized testing, I would simply refer you to the issues before that the hearing officer said were before her. That's not included. It was not included by the parents' petition for a due process hearing, and that's what we're claiming in our briefs. So with regard to the argument that there was only limited criteria used by the district's evaluations, I'd say just 2 things. First, the parents themselves balked initially at the use of standardized testing, and there was a negotiated agreement as to what the district would use in its evaluation. And secondly, we're talking about a detailed review with using professionally developed checklists. Their own consultant testified that the checklist that the physical therapist, for instance, used was taken from something that she was familiar with. So there's nothing in the record, and there is nothing from the private consultant's testimony that criticizes the limits or the services that provided in third grade. Parents' counsel didn't cite you to any. There isn't. Doesn't cite it in his brief. It's not in the record. Last, with regard to the award of attorney's fees, your precedent, and I would direct you to Eddie and Michael F. versus River Falls School District, says that reimbursement, even if you disagree with our position and award the reimbursement for the independent evaluation.
The compensatory side isn't that much more important from the point of view of attorney's fees than this reimbursement problem?
Yes, you are. I would agree with that.
If you lose on the compensatory side, then attorney's fees can be paid.
Well, I would argue, and I don't think I have enough time, since the red light just went on.
Oh, yeah.
I'm referring to our brief, but I would suggest that remember that we made a settlement offer which would have provided direct OT services, and I'd also suggest that the difference between direct and OT services are very indistinguishable here. They involve the same thing in terms of observation, working with teachers, and the aid to provide skills training for the students. And I was specifically...
What actually is the difference between direct and...
Well, that's
relative.
What if it segue to my end, Your Honor, because...
It's quite an issue in the compensatory.
I would direct you to the record, Item 13, Volume 2, Exhibit H2, at pages 217 through 220, where the independent evaluation for the parent cannot even explain the difference in this instance between what materially would be different between consultative and direct services. And I would suggest, even if you were to, therefore, approve and uphold the award of direct services, that's so slight, it does not change the fundamental placement, services, or the relationship between the parties, and therefore, even under that circumstance, they would not be the prevailing party. Thank you.
Well, of course, these are always very difficult cases for the parents of children with special needs and for the district, and both counsel would be commended for the excellent briefs and oral presentations this morning. Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.